You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore.
I'd like to help you, Dr. Yes, I really need a word, but the din in my head, it's too much and it's no good. I'm standing in a window, tunnel, shouting through the war, and I'd like to give the information, asking for the word, blood makes noise. It's ringing in my ear, blood makes noise. And I can't really hear you in the thickening of fear.
Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Good Sunday evening, everybody, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Common Sense Show. I am your host, Dave Hodges, and we like to think of ourselves as the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. And boy, do we need freeing with all that's going on. I want to give a little warning here before we jump in to our top of the hour messages and join our first guest, Jim Fetzer. This is the kind of show, kind of like Ammon Bundy, when we had him on and we got killed, knocked off completely, every system down, even though the systems were independent of each other. That could happen, and I can't promise, but if it's a partial takedown, we will still be able to record the show in its entirety because we have a great technical crew, and we will play it through archives. And I just want to make that clear to everybody. So take heart if we have a technical difficulty here brought to us by our friends at the NSA. Well, in the third hour, we're going to be joined by my good friend Paul Preston from Agenda 21 Radio, and we're going to be exploring a lot of things, but there's a tie-in with the Oroville Dam to Vegas, and it's a remote tie-in, but the threads are there, and we're going to explore that as well as get Paul's reaction to Vegas. Second hour, former CIA operative Robert David Steele, and he's going to be giving us the perspective from the intel point of view. And in just a moment, we're going to be joined by Dr. Jim Fetzer. You know, just a note here, this is so much fun to do radio. When I first started up in Wickenburg, Arizona, in the now defunct 1280 AM KBSZ, and the late Pete Peterson was kind enough to have me on and said, Dave, you need to have a show, and this is what we were fighting for our property rights against McCain. And my first three guests were just knockout guests. Jim was one of them. Jerome Corsi was the other, and Alex Jones's guest host at the time, Bob Dacey, who was helping us with our property rights battle, was also on. Talk about starting at the top. Well, we've kind of gone full circle, and in just a moment we're going to join Jim, but I want to let everybody know that we are brought to you by some very important sponsors who makes this show possible, and without them, we would have a difficult time airing. And the one sponsor who I really have such an affiliation with, such a love for, is Steve Quayle of Renaissance Precious Metals. Steve and I just don't have a business relationship. We're colleagues, but we're also friends. I have the greatest respect for Steve, and I'm a customer of Steve's as well, too. I have bought gold and silver from Steve, and I recommend that you do the same thing. If you've got the money, don't let it sit there in your bank account and let it go to you-know-where when the you-know-what hits the fan. Get it out now and get it into precious metals. And to do that, you need to give Steve a call at 406-586-4842, Renaissance Precious Metals. And, of course, his website that has the banner ad for this is at stevequayle.com. And he will tell you if he can't help you. I mean, he asked me a million questions. I thought, gosh, does Steve want to sell me anything? So you'll get no pressure at all. We're also brought to you in this hour by Numana Foods. And we've seen comparison tests with storable food between Numana and others, and there's other fine companies out there. But Numana wins on all the comparison tests. And if you don't have storable food in your present preparation plan, you are really at risk, and you're not going to get help from your neighbors. You need to start now. And you say, well, Dave, what if I have to bug out and get on the run? I understand that fear. I get those questions all the time. We offer the grab-and-go bucket, 72 portable meals you can just grab and hit the road with. But there's everything that you could possibly want with restaurant-quality food with great pricing at numana.com/Hodges. And for our listeners, Common Sense Show listeners, you can take 5% off with the coupon code Hodges9. Again, that's Numana.com/Hodges. Boy, I'll tell you, what a week it's been. And I don't want to waste any more time. I want to get right down to brass tacks. I want to bring in an old soul. This guy is on top of seemingly everything. Every time I turn around, I'm reading something by Jim Fetzer, and it's making me scratch my head and wonder, gee, I hadn't thought of that. And he gives me so many of those moments. So join me in welcoming Dr. Jim Fetzer, former professor from the University of Minnesota Duluth. Jim, it's great to have you back on again.
Oh, Dave, I'm simply delighted. You've been doing such great work for so many years. I'm really just pleased as I can be to be here.
Well, thank you. The pleasure is ours, my friend. Well, we talked about, before we came on the air, starting with Vegas. And I've been following everything you're putting out, and it's like you must never sleep, my friend, because the volume of material that you're putting out is incredible. Where would you like to start with the evidence?
Well, let's put it this way, Dave, because this has been kind of murky, and I did a huge amount of sorting things out to figure out what's going on as I'm piecing it together. But this guy was a completely implausible candidate. When I opened the Wisconsin State Journal last Tuesday and saw the shooter was a wealthy real estate investor, I mean, the story begins like this. Mesquite, Nevada. Stephen Paddock lived in a tiny Nevada retirement community where the amenities include golf, tennis, and boche. He was a multimillionaire real estate investor, recently shipped his 90-year-old mother a walker, and liked to travel to Las Vegas to play high-stakes video poker. And I thought, well, this is ridiculous. This is not, doesn't fit the profile of a mass murderer or a terrorist. And right beside, they had a bar graph of the deadliest shootings, beginning, of course, with the topper, Vegas, 2017, allegedly 59 dead. But right below was the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, 50. Well, I've done so much work on that, including a book, From Orlando to Dallas and Beyond. Dave, I mean, the permit for the club expired 3 years before the event. It had a legal occupancy of 150. They claimed there were over 300. If 50 had been killed, 53 injured, there would have been abandoned vehicles all over the place. They weren't there. You had very amateur, clumsy crisis actors carrying purported victims toward the club rather than away. As soon as they got out of the range or so, they thought of the camera. They put him down. He did a little jig. They thought they were so clever. I had a correspondent in the area wrote me and said it wasn't even a gay club. The Orlando Emergency Medical Center declined to charge anyone for services rendered. Dave, when's the last time you heard a hospital not charging for a Band-Aid? But that appears to be because they would have been guilty of fraud. I mean, nobody was hurt. Totally, completely fabricated. And then they put out two absurd videos called Dance Orlando Dance. One involved actors and actresses dressed up as nurses and doctors, another as police women and policemen. David, it was insulting when you put it all together. And I had a 25-year police officer, 15 as a general detective by the name of Scott Alexander, who published two Orlando musical blogs for me on jamesfetzer.blogspot.com, where he explained how Melissa Etheridge and another, Christina Aguilera, had totally well-produced songs out within days that were highly orchestrated. The lyrics fit the pulse exactly. That was his part one. Part two was they got together with brought together 150 of the Hollywood stars. I mean, these are people among the busiest in the world to do, again, a fully orchestrated production within days. I mean, these things would take weeks to set up, Dave. It was just further proof that this whole thing was completely staged. And then Virginia Tech, they listed, to, so far as I know, that was legit in 2007. See, but that's before the Smith-Mundt Act of 1948, which precluded the use of the same techniques of disinformation and propaganda within the United States that are used without, was nullified by the National Defense Appropriation of 2013, just in time for the Sandy Hook event, which is the next on their list. Dave, we've proven that the school was closed by 2008. It was loaded with asbestos and other biohazards. It was damaged by hurricanes. They had a flood in 2007 that appears to have been the last straw. There were no students there. I found a witness who used to have lunch in the parking lot. We have other reports of those who were at the school, used furniture from the school in 2010, that it was in deplorable condition. I mean, this whole thing is another elaborate scam, where we even have the FEMA manual for the two-day exercise with a rehearsal on the 13th going live on the 14th. This, of course, all 2012, where many of the participants became confused. They put up donation sites on the 13th. Even Adam Lanza's date of death was recorded in the Social Security Death Index originally as having happened on the 13th. Making his event, including 20 kids and 6 adults, the following day all the more remarkable.
That is, it is a remarkable event. And what you're really convincing a lot of our listeners of, I'm sure, is that the globalists work off the same playbook from catastrophe to catastrophe.
Yeah, they invent catastrophes to promote their agenda. For example, Stephen Paddock even had a girlfriend who was a Filipino. His brother described her as a very nice woman who sent cookies to their mother. She, when she came back from the Philippines, was interrogated in L.A. by the FBI, described him as a very kind, gentle man. The brother said he had a couple of weapons, but that he wasn't into guns. I mean, the whole thing's completely ridiculous. The raconteur went whole hog about his background and why he didn't fit. Stephen Paddock, 64, multimillionaire, $400,000 retirement home, multiple properties, 2 airlines, private pilot, instrument rated, wears reading glasses, retired aerospace accountant, and real estate mogul or some such. Divorced for 27 years, no kids, lives 90 minutes up I-15 from Sin City. His roommate's a 62-year-old Filipino. He can go anywhere he likes, do anything he wants, fly all over the country, play at Vegas. I mean, it's just ridiculous beyond belief. So that if you go through the kinds of motives that would typically figure in a case like this, money, but he's a multimillionaire with a ton of assets. Money doesn't matter. Ideology, he doesn't have strong political or religious affiliations or beliefs whatsoever. Compromise? He's retired, divorced, rich, 64. What would compromise him to do this? Coercion? Do this? Or? But he's already retired, divorced, rich, 64. I mean, he's virtually unthreatenable. Ego? I just wondered if I could break the Guinness Book of Records for the most people killed in one shot. The fact is, there's nothing that fits here. And get this, Dave. Shortly before the shooting, he was still playing with his girlfriend's casino card, trying to rack up points, where those points accumulate toward benefits like comp rooms, as apparently the room he had at the Mandalay was a comp room. What would you be doing, you know, working on building up points for comp rooms in the future if you're planning a mass shooting about to kill yourself? And it's interesting, when we turn to the suite, again, we see what appears to be completely staged. 23 weapons. I mean, right off the bat, you have to say that's an absurdity. He would need whatever he was going to use as his principal, I mean, if this had actually been the shooter, and a self-defense weapon. You wouldn't bother with 23 weapons. We got a photograph of him lying on the ground, and there's blood. But Dave, there are shell casings on top of the blood that aren't covered with it, which means they were scattered around in the room after he was already dead, because otherwise they'd be covered with blood. In addition, we know that there should have been around 2,000 to 3,000 rounds fired if you listen to the boom, 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 boom of the weapons. And I tell you, it turns out there were real or simulated shots being fired from 2 other locations in the hotel. We even found yet a third shooter in the crowd who actually turns into a crouch position, begins firing into the crowd. But you should have had, if this had been legit, if this had been on the up and up instead of completely phony, fake stage, there ought to have been thousands of shell casings there. They aren't there. The whole thing is totally fraudulent.
No, it absolutely is. Now, do you actually believe that this alleged assassin is dead?
Well, to the best that I'm able to tell, he appears to be dead, but there's reason to question that, because we have reports of someone who bears a striking resemblance to him in Atlantic City. I have a friend who's an expert in comparing photos to determine whether it's the same person. Unfortunately, he was displaced by the Puerto Rican hurricane, which, by the way, appears to have been a man-made phenomenon, as was that in Houston. So what I think we have here with that photograph of him with the shell casings and their weapons lying across his leg that are very odd, they don't look normal at all, is a parallel that ties together, you know, the various elements, as we had on the Life magazine cover of Lee Oswald holding a Mannlicher right. Carcano. Right. He's got a right, you know, pistol belt with a revolver with which he's alleged to have shot J.D. Tippit. Holding two communist newspapers, I mean, Dave, what more convenient package could you have? But Lee protested and said that was his face pasted on somebody else's body. Jim Mars and I have been able to prove that what Lee told Will Fritz, a homicide detective interrogating him, was completely true. We published a piece called Framing the Patsy, the Case of Lee Harvey Oswald Together. Jack White, a legendary photo and film analyst, has discovered three different Mannlicher Carcanos, each of which is alleged to be the Mannlicher Carcano with which Lee shot the president. But the fact is, it turns out, he wasn't even in the sixth floor. In fact, most Americans are still unaware that he was actually in the doorway of the book depository at the time the motorcade passed by, which meant he not only could not be the lone demented gunman, he couldn't have even been one of the shooters. So, I mean, this gets absurd beyond belief. I mean, the evidence is extensive, detailed, even massive. But
let me give you one item that I've come across, Jim, that I think is really interesting. I've looked at the death photo of the accused assassin, and I'm using that term on purpose, and I've been told by people he had a tattoo on his neck that would be visible from the front or the side saying 13. And that photo reveals no such tattoo. That's why I'm wondering if it's even him.
Well, believe me, I looked into that. And Jeff Renz did a magnification, and it did not appear that the tattoo was bona fide, that it actually represented ink in the skin. And I have another correspondent, a woman who's very keen-eyed, and she discovered there are a couple of other numbers in the same photograph that makes it appear that they were from the print process. When they reproduced the photograph, some numbers got in there, and that the 13 isn't bona fide, because, believe me, Dave, I thought this was a very nice conclusive proof. We're talking about two different people. So I took it seriously initially. Now I have to say it appears to be a remnant of the photographic process, but that does not mean that this person we see dead lying there with those shell casings that appear to have been simply scattered around for authenticity is, in fact, the Stephen Paddock, as is alleged.
That is. See, this is the avenues you go down. On my website today, Jim, I posted, among other things, the contents of an anonymous letter I got, ostensibly from a trauma room surgeon. And this is what he said that got my attention, because I wasn't going to publish the anonymous nature, but what he said, I thought, well, this really is interesting. He said that he had pulled bullet fragments out of three patients, and no one from the police came to make him sign an affidavit. He said, basically, men in suits, unidentified law enforcement affiliation, and he never signed for anything. And he went on to explain to me that he'd been an expert witness in several court cases. And he said, if you don't verify your evidence at the time you extract it and complete the surgery, a defense attorney will rip that evidence to shreds. In fact, a judge might not even let it in. Have you heard anything about this?
Oh, that's a great point. Well, yes, I have run across a similar report, and it looks to be authentic about taking bullet fragments out, which means that, as you're going to hear from Robert David Steele, whom I featured on my own show last week, this appears to be a hybrid event where they had a lot of simulated shooting, but some real shots also appear to have been fired. And that of course, is going to be pose a problem for the future, because, you know, we even have an advertisement for crisis actors in Las Vegas 15 days before the event, and it looks as though a lot of this was indeed completely staged. But if you're actually going to have, you know, mixed or hybrid events, then you're going to have trouble recruiting, because they don't want to be shot accidentally. I mean, they're doing this only because they think it's going to make them some money, it's going to be kind of fun, and they have no scruples. They're willing to do it just for the sake of the money. We had an addition, an anonymous 4chan user warning of the attack 3 weeks in advance. This is a guy who said, stay away from Las Vegas due to a coming deadly attack. He used the name John, made a series of, at the time, overlooked posts, warned other users to avoid gatherings of large groups of people in Vegas or nearby Henderson areas. He claimed to have inside knowledge of what he referred to as a high-incident project, which I take to be one that involves a large number of casualties and has political prominence. We also have a union worker who blew the whistle on mandatory active shooter training that was taking place on September 30th at midnight. And, in fact, when this event happened, a friend of a friend reported he was actually at the craps table in Las Vegas, and when they were closed as a consequence of the Mandalay Bay event, the craps dealer said, you know, we just trained for this yesterday, Dave.
That's amazing.
And then, of course, there was this woman described as Hispanic, short, who came into the crowd and turned and told everyone they were all going to die 45 minutes before the event. So,
correct.
But what you have here with all these weapons, Dave, is, you know, an assortment of the most popular weapons that the gun grabbers would like to ban. In other words, this is a gun control fanatic's wet dream, this event in Las Vegas. I have no doubt that's one of the three primary reasons for staging this event. Those who actually have studied the relationship between gun bans and homicide rates will realize that, in fact, the homicides go up when you ban guns. And the rationale is perfectly obvious if you pause to think about it. Criminals don't adhere to the law. I mean, that's what makes them criminals. So if you pass laws, it's the law-abiding citizens who will surrender their guns. The criminals won't. That means everywhere turns into a gun-free area. I included an appendix in the book Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, which had 13 contributors, including six current or retired college professors, and indeed Paul Preston, who will also be your guest this evening. Where Paul, I'm sure, will talk about how he was so alarmed by what he saw coming from Sandy Hook that he reached out to his contacts in the Obama administration in the Department of Education, all of whom confirmed to him that it had been a drill, that no one had died, and that it was done to promote gun control. Well, I have a study here as Appendix D to the book, which Amazon.com banned less than a month after it went on sale on 22 October 2015. It sold nearly 500 copies when they banned it on 19 November. They had 20 books on sale, Dave, but only one that contested the official account. So, of course, that was the one that they banned, where John Lott explained the relationship and how when guns are banned, the homicide rate goes up. And, I mean, when you just stop and think about it, I mean, Chicago is supposed to have the most stringent gun laws in the country. And, of course, their problem with homicides is completely out of control. But when you remove guns from law-abiding citizens are unable to, you know, defend themselves in a situation where they're confronted with firearms or come to the aid of others. The mainstream is very much on the gun ban agenda, and therefore you don't hear the stories unless you search for them or they inadvertently pop up, where someone who happened to have a legal possession of a gun, maybe concealed carry, for example, I do, many others do, actually was able to thwart a criminal act in progress, in some cases actually killing an assailant before they killed other people. So I'm convinced, by the way, the second motive has to do with these scanners, these full-body scanners. Michael Chertoff, who became our second head of the Department of Homeland Security after Tom Ridge, who, of course, is a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen, who was an assistant to then-Attorney General John Ashcroft during 9/11 and directed the release of the so-called Dancing Israelis, five apparently Mossad agents who were at Liberty State Park filming the destruction of the Twin Towers and celebrating among themselves, high-fives and the like, who I spotted by a neighbor, reported to the police. And when they apprehended the van, the driver immediately said, we're not the problem. Your problem is our problem. The problem is the Palestinians, which is simply absurd. I mean, every serious intel expert who's looked at 9/11 has concluded there were only two agencies in the world that could have pulled it off. One was the CIA, the other was the Mossad, and on 9/11 they were collaborating together, where these guys were arrested, were incarcerated for 44 days, and then Chertoff directed their release. They went back to Israel. Three of them appeared on Israeli TV and talked about their role there having been to document the event, which obviously implies foreknowledge, but of course Israel was the prime mover. I mean, the rationale, and I'm convinced it originated in the fertile imagination of Bibi Netanyahu, who organized a conference in Jerusalem about terrorism even before the demise of the Soviet Union in 1990, was to contrive an event that would provide a pseudo-justification for drawing the United States into these endless wars in the Middle East, to take out the modern Arab states that serve as a counterbalance to Israel's domination of the region, and, you know, eventually confront Persian Iran, which they fear the most because it's the strongest and has the greatest capacity to make a difference in relation to Israel, where Wesley Clark, who had been the Supreme Commander Allied Forces Europe, actually commanding General of NATO when he returned to the Pentagon, had learned from another general of a plan to invade Iraq, which puzzled them both enormously because they agreed Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. Neither, by the way, did Osama bin Laden, who actually was working for the U.S., was instrumental in getting the Stinger missiles into the hands of the Mujahideen in Afghanistan to draw them out. He actually was Colonel Tim Osman in the agency, Dave, and was in a hospital in Dubai from his multiple problems, including, you know, kidney failure. It's tough to get those dialysis machines in and out of those caves in Afghanistan.
There
by a CIA officer shortly before his death, which took place on 15 December 2001. He was buried in an unmarked grave. There were local obituaries. Both CNN and Fox News, actually, on the 26th of December, ran reports that Osama bin Laden was dead. David Ray Griffin has now published a book about it, Osama bin Laden Dead or Alive. But the fact is, it was politically advantageous to Barack Obama to resuscitate him and kill him again in 2011 in order to position himself for a triumphal reelection, which, of course, came to place. But it turns out that Chertoff was responsible for getting these body scanners into all of our airports. And, it, you know...
Well, he made money on it, too. Jim, he made money. He personally profited from those scanners.
Well, this is why, you see, the idea is going to be resurrected. They had to take a whole lot of them out of airports and put them into storage because their safety had never been certified. I mean, think of it this way. One columnist who was advocating their use was saying it only takes 30 seconds more. Consider when you visit a dentist and they want to x-ray your teeth. They put a lead vest on you. The exposure is going to be milliseconds. Going through these scanners for 30 seconds? My God, how much damage can you do to the human body in 30 seconds of intense x-ray? I mean, it's just insane. But it appears now that the second motive I attribute to this event is that he, Sheldon Adelson, others are going to make scads of money. The Chertoff Group is a principal supplier of these machines. They're going to be installed in the hotels in Las Vegas. And they're going to... Here's something that this... This John guy actually posted. If their plan is successful, state of Nevada will pass a law in the future making all casinos have mandatory metal detectors and backscatter machines. Soon after, a federal law will be passed to put these machines in universities, high schools, federal buildings, you name it. OSI Systems and Chertoff are the main producers of these machines. Sometime around 2020, Chertoff and OSI will merge into a single company. After they merge, the owners will sell off all their stock and make billions in profit. Mr. Chertoff has been in contact with Sheldon Adelson. Mr. Adelson will become a huge sponsor of these machines. He'll be the first to put them in his casinos when the law passes. This is my last message for now. Don't expect to hear from me anytime soon. I mean, that is what I take to be the second key motive behind this Las Vegas.
Is this, Jim, is this Jim Murren, the CEO of MGM, which owns Mandalay Bay and has all these terrorist associations, mostly through the Southern Poverty Law Center to start? Is he involved in this too, in terms of profiting on the back end?
Well, I expect that's exactly right, Dave. I mean, you know, these people are devious. And everyone knows that Hollywood is completely dominated by Israelis. In fact, one columnist cheerfully wrote about the question, do Jews control Hollywood? He said, of course. And then he went through all of the major studios, listing the owners and the directors, and every one of them, with a single exception, was Jewish. And this is part of the reason how, you know, Israel is able to control the message so exclusively. We know the CIA, which works in cooperation with the Mossad, infiltrated our media beginning in the 50s, late 50s, early 60s. We even had William Colby, then its director in 1975, testifying to Congress that the agency owns everyone of significance in the media. At that point, there was only one media. There wasn't an alternative media. In fact, the alternative media has been so much better at actually getting out truthful and accurate information that they're now going on a rampage to try to crush it. Google has been taking down video after video about Las Vegas, and before that about Sandy Hook. I mean, Dave, it's stunning. We're in the grip of a ruthless propaganda campaign where the American people are going to be denied access to information they need to understand what's going on and what decisions ought to be made to fix it. The third motive appears to me to come from Israel. Julian Assange just recently, I mean, just before these events, on September 28th, it was published, the real threat to the U.S. is not Russia, but Israel. He explained how, Russia, acting on its own doorstep in East Germany, doesn't in fact threaten the United States or any actual vital interest, nor does Moscow threaten the U.S. through its intervention on behalf of the Syrian government in the Middle East. That Russia is described incessantly as a threat in those areas is largely a contrivance arranged by the media, the Democrats and Republican National Committee, and by the White House. But more importantly, he observes, a country other than Russia has interfered in U.S. elections, has endangered Americans living or working overseas, has corrupted America's legislative and executive branches. It has exploited that corruption to initiate legislation favorable to itself, has promoted unnecessary and winnable wars, and has stolen American technology and military secret. Its ready access to the mainstream media to spread its own propaganda provides it with cover for its actions, and it accomplishes all that more through the agency of a powerful and well-funded domestic lobby that oddly is not subject to the accountability afforded by the Foreign Agents Registration Act of 1938, even though it manifestly works on behalf of a foreign government. That country is, of course, Israel. And indeed, we know from Cynthia McKinney that when new members of Congress arrive in Washington, they're asked to sign a pledge to put the interests of Israel ahead of those of the United States. And those who don't, Dave, find themselves confronted with a well-financed alternative candidate, or even that their districts have been redrawn and they no longer have a seat. Cynthia was able to overcome both of those obstacles to serve 8 terms as a member of the House, but most representatives aren't able to do that. In fact, I had an interview with a colleague, Gary King, the other day, and he asked me, did I know how many members of the current Congress refused to sign the pledge? And I was unable to answer the question, which he responded by holding up the index finger of his right hand. What? And it wouldn't surprise me, Dave, if that were the truth. Now, here's what I think is the overarching motive, and this ties back with Charlottesville and a host of other events I'll sketch briefly. Netanyahu's very, very pissed off that the United States has, and the CIA and Israel haven't been able to topple Bashar al-Assad in Syria. That was part of the plan. In fact, the Russians are wiping out ISIS, which is led by Mossad officer, funded by the United States and Saudi Arabia. They're killing 2,000 ISIS members a day, Dave, at this point. The Russians are being relentless about it. And Bibi is pissed off because he's under investigation for corruption. His days in office may be numbered. He wanted to be the PM when Israel expanded to the greater Israel of Zionist aspiration, which includes a big chunk of Iraq, most of Syria, Jordan, Lebanon, even part of Saudi Arabia and Egypt as well. But that has been thwarted. At the point now where we stand today, the aspiration for a greater Israel is dead in its tracks. And I believe that we've seen a whole range of disparate events that have been extremely puzzling. I mean, I've been looking at these and trying to figure out what the world is going on. And it was after I was sent an email by a correspondent pointing out that in Las Vegas, 7,000 Israelis live in Las Vegas, that the Las Vegas mayor, Carolyn Goodman, and the spokesman for the University Medical Center, Danita Cohen, are both Jewish. Now, I don't accuse them of complicity here, but I'm telling you, this, the big picture appears to be retribution against the United States for its failure to deliver Syria, Dave. I mean, this is stunning stuff.
Let's hold that right there, because I want to ask you some. First, let me tell you what happened to me, because we're kind of at this juncture. We could go left or right. But at 3 p.m. Pacific, and my show airs at 5 p.m. Pacific, 1 week ago today, I received a call, and this source never calls me. We have an alternative source of communication. And he said, what do you know about Antifa? And I said, well, I see that they're going to say they're starting a civil war, and that's public. He said, well, do you know who they're doing it with? And he mentioned ISIS and MS-13, and I know what that meant exactly. Now, when I came on the air, Jim, I almost aired it, but we had wall-to-wall programming, and I thought, let me try to verify this through the side door before I go nuts. But as I went off the air, the shooting had already started. And had I known, I would have aired this. Now, let me tell you what I'm getting, and I want to see what you think. And I'm getting more, not that Israel is pushing this, but this is a designed breakup of the United States, and we're going to see a Tet offensive of terrorism across the country using these terrorist forces. Do you have any information on that?
That sounds completely correct to me. It's begun in Charlottesville. This was a financed by George Soros. He brought in busloads of these Antifa and Black Lives Matter people. We have done extensive study of the event that made such big news, where there was allegedly a driver into a crowd of protesters. It was all photoshopped. It was all staged, Dave. We've discovered there were two cars, two Dodge Challengers. One had a black stripe, one didn't. One had a sunroof, one didn't. Two different drivers, oddly, allegedly of the same, or virtually the same name. One's James A. Field, the other's James G. Field. James A. Field is a designated patsy. He's 20 years old. Supposed to be diagnosed with schizophrenia, on antipsychotic medication, wears heavy prescription glasses. The other's a very athletic 32-year-old military veteran who commands a battalion in Ohio. When you compare their images with those we have from the vehicle involved in this, it's the James G. Field, the guy, the 32-year-old combat veteran. And I'll tell you, when I saw that car back up out of that collision, it was with such speed and skill, it required someone the equivalent of a race car driver. I mean, it was professional. I couldn't have done it. Here in addition, we have three different takes. We have one where there's only one vehicle, the Dodge Challenger, no other vehicles around, and it's approaching the crowd in the image. We have another of the Dodge Challenger approaching the crowd, but there's a black pickup truck right beside it. It's clearly a second take. Here's the third, the one that made the big news. There are three different vehicles involved. One's a maroon van that actually was parked at that intersection for 5 minutes with no driver before this took place. There's a second van behind it. And then the third Challenger comes and smashes it from behind. I've done multiple interviews on this, including with Ole Domegaard, who's one of the world's leading experts on these matters. And Ole discovered that neither of those two vehicles had a driver, clearly because they didn't want them to suffer whiplash or injure their neck from the staged event. It was completely contrived. I wrote to 75 members of the Department of History at the University of Virginia. I wrote to the president, the provost, the vice provost. I wrote to the board of visitors who oversee the university with three video studies explaining it was two cars plus two drivers plus two takes equals completely fake. And they haven't done a thing about it. They've been played. It's ridiculous. So Charlottesville the two who were supposed to be leading the movement both turned out to be fraudulent. One graduated from an exclusive private boys school near Dallas and went to Duke, and he suddenly turns out to be, you know, a white supremacist. The other is a guy who's also got a shady background. He was actually an Occupy member. There's a photograph of him and his wife with Laura Bush, of all people. These were supposed to be the extremists who are leading the group. Totally fake. The mayor of Charlottesville was involved. He ordered the Charlottesville police to stand down. The governor of the state was involved. He used the National Guard and the state police to channel the peaceful protester into a direct confrontation with the Antifa, Black Lives Matter people. Totally, totally rigged. George Soros is reported to have the view that he wants all the races to intermarry, so everyone else is roughly a light brown color, and then the pure Jewish race will emerge to rule the world. I'm not suggesting that's
You think that's really Soros's view?
Yeah. Oh, I believe it. Yeah. Here are a couple other things now, Dave. This Cuban embassy business was bizarre in the extreme. This high frequency sonic stuff causing actual damage to the members. Cuba didn't do that. Cuba's waited over 50 years to have a rapprochement with the United States. What nation would be opposed to that? Not Cuba, but a country that doesn't want there to be a reconciliation between the United States and a former communist nation that might lead to reconciliation with Russia, Israel. Do you think they have the money for this high-tech stuff? Because I'm also convinced they were responsible for the hurricanes. James McCanney, multiple other experts have explained they're man-made. They can be directed from space using lasers. You might think, but Israel doesn't have that kind of resource. But the fact is, Donald Rumsfeld announced the day before 9/11 that $2.3 trillion was missing from the Pentagon budget. The chief financial officer, the controller of the Pentagon at the time, was Dove Zakheim, who's not only a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen, but actually a rabbi who has a high-tech company that manufactures, you know, control devices to take over airplanes if they're hijacked. I'm convinced the original plan was to use remotely controlled drones to fly into the building until they discovered it was physically impossible to get them inside. So, and then we have these anomalies in the, off of the coast of Japan, Dave. Listen, I've spent a lot of time aboard Navy ships. I'm a former Marine Corps officer. I tell you, those scenarios are totally absurd. These ships are very sophisticated. They have electronics that enable them to know everything going on in the air, on the water, beneath the water. There's no way whatsoever that these huge lumbering cargo ships could have rammed them unless they were completely controlled outside, that the GPS was manipulated or their electronics were frozen, as happened in the Caspian Sea, where we had a ship, the Donald Cook, where a Russian bomber approached and they couldn't do anything about it because all their equipment, including their navigation, their fire control systems, and everything was frozen. The bomber made multiple passes. What that means is this technology exists. I believe Israel has it. By prior agreement, all of our raw intelligence from the NSA and the CIA goes directly to Tel Aviv, so that, in fact, the Israelis know what we're going to do before we do it, Dave. There's only one country in the world that would have the motive to go to war with the United States. That is Israel, and that is what I believe is taking place today.
And you really do believe that Israel's the mastermind behind this, what happened in Vegas?
I do. I mean, that's the third. You see, you got multiple levels of motivation, because you got the gun grabbers who set this up. 23 guns, I'm told 23 is a significant number for the, you know, the Masons. That this has Illuminati aspects. It's absurd. He couldn't use 23 guns. Why would he bring in 23 guns? How could there be any hotel employees not noticing something odd if he was bringing in this vast arsenal? All he actually would need was the weapon he was planning to use and something to defend himself, not 23 weapons. Not only that, but he's supposed to have broken the windows out. Well, Brass Check TV had a brilliant piece about this, explaining that these modern hotels have this very tough glass and have sensors in their windows, so if any are broken, they immediately know, because they want to guard against suicides, which, of course, would tarnish the reputation, you know, draw down the people who they want to come to Vegas to have fun. Hearing people, you know, leaping to committing suicide from your hotel room is not going to be a big draw. You want Donnie and Marie. You don't want suicide jumpers. The whole thing is completely fraudulent. And when you put together now the big push that's going to come for these scanners, See, so on top of the gun grab agenda, and we're hearing it from Biden, I mean, you know, all these people are talking about these guns, Nancy Pelosi, all the usual suspects, but you're hearing absolutely absurd claims about it that ignore the fact that when you take guns away from law-abiding people, I mean, the NRA made this point a long time ago. They said when guns are outlawed, only outlaws will have guns. That's basically fundamentally right, and it turns out that crime goes up. It doesn't go down. So you're hearing a lot of complete nonsense and rubbish on the major networks and on CNN and MSNBC in particular, which are both absolutely 100% CIA-dominated, where MSNBC is simply the feminist light version of what we get from CNN.
Now, I couldn't agree with you more on that, but I find it interesting that the NRA has capitulated on the stocks. This is not the time for them to be making deals with the devil, but that's what they're doing. Are you aware of that? Do you know that the NRA is capitulating?
Dave, I'm so embarrassed by the NRA. I sent them, nobody died at Sandy Hook. I explained to them they ought to make a stand about this because no one had died, and for them to use this fabricated event. And now get this, Kevin Barrett has explained that Israel is trying to maintain that the shooter was a convert to Islam so they can blame it on, you know, Muslims. I mean, it's just like on 9/11, between the destruction of the South Tower and the North, the networks all played footage of Palestinians rejoicing, conveying the impression this was concurrent with the events watching on TV. They even reported the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine had claimed responsibility. This is completely absurd. No one could have been less well-positioned to conduct such an event than the Palestinians. It turned out to be archival footage from an event years and years in the past, some political or religious event that caused great joy. In fact, the Palestinians were all sitting dumbfounded, just as was most of the rest of the world. Archival footage, Dave, they just happened to have at their fingertips on 9/11. And yeah, now we're finding the Wall Street Journal, of all things, YouTube tweaks search results as Las Vegas conspiracy theories ride to the top. The top five videos for news about Las Vegas shooting are what the Wall Street Journal is claiming debunked claims. But I tell you, these claims haven't been debunked. We even have a video where you can actually see a shooter in the crowd turning to fire into the crowd. And Dave, the principal shooting, real or fake, was coming from the middle of the Mandalay Hotel, the 4th and the 10th floors. In fact, I listened to a recording made by a cab driver, and it sounded familiar, and I compared it with that for an M60 machine gun, which is belt-fed, and it's exactly the same, same pattern, the same sequence.
I have the same information from experts I've consulted. They told me that was an M60, and they said that this guy would have had to have been a Rambo to fire it. He would have had to have held the gun in one arm and belt-feed it with the other while leaning over at a difficult angle, and they said they didn't know of any portly 64-year-old man that could do that.
It's all completely absurd, Dave. The more you look into it, and your next guess is going to be sensational on this because Robert David Steele is convinced it was a hybrid event with a mix of real and artificial. And some of these reports about victims that appear to be authentic, who are explaining, you know, the wounds they suffered and how they've sought to contact the FBI to tell them about what they experienced, and the FBI has shown no interest whatsoever. That's because, as in the case of JFK, as in the case of 9/11, Robert Mueller became the director shortly before 9/11. He left the FBI after the Boston bombing. He was there during Sandy Hook. He buried those. Those are all easily exploitable, discernible, explainable events that had nothing to do with the official narratives, but the role of the FBI was to support the official narrative. So here, even in Las Vegas, when you got a victim who's prepared to tell them of his experience, they're showing no interest at all. The reason for that, Dave, is you don't want to get into your database information that's contrary to the official account. The best way to do it is to screen it out. In relation to JFK, for example, the FBI never interviewed the 10 closest witnesses to the limousine, and they filtered the questions that were asked of witnesses who knew too much, and then if somehow inadvertently some of their testimony got into the record, they simply changed it. It was that thorough and compelling. Lyndon was a principal driver. He forced himself on the ticket in 1960 to take out JFK so he could accede to the presidency. Edgar was right there pitching with him, using the FBI to cover it up. As the new president of the United States, he was the only guy who could guarantee that no one who participated in the assassination would ever pay a price for it.
You know, Jim, I can't believe this hour is gone. We're just about out of time. Let me very quickly, though, well, we're going to have to save that for another time, because I want to give you time to talk about your radio show and how people can follow your good work.
Well, really, the best thing to do is check out moonrockbooks.com, because I'm bringing together experts on different aspects of these cases. We have a second edition of Sandy Hook. The first edition you can actually download for free, because when it was banned, I released it as a PDF, just put in Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, a book on the Boston bombing, a new book on 9/11, a new book on JFK, a book on, you know, Orlando. I'm working right now on a book on Charlottesville, and we're going to follow it up with a book on Las Vegas, Dave. So we're doing what we can. Go there, check it out. That's the best place. And there's even a biographical sketch of me as the editor of these books about my radio shows and such.
Okay, all right, that sounds really good. You know, I'll just mention this as an aside, and we don't have really time to get into it. I was sent a video today, and I'm going to air it in the morning. And it's a lady and her husband who were at the, excuse me if I mispronounce the name, Bellagio Hotel. And they were in the bar on the first floor when the windows were shot out. Her husband threw her to the ground, jumped on her, and then security came in and ordered everybody to get to the rear. People were screaming. They evacuated them to the third floor. This woman is on video the entire time, walking up and down, talking about what happened, and she's showing all the people sequestered on the third floor, and they can't get out. They're being guarded.
Dave, let me confirm that. There were concurrent attacks taking place on the Flamingo, the Bellagio, New York. A colleague of mine, Dean Ryan, was in Las Vegas. He was picking up all this information. I mean, that just shows you how massively they're suppressing what we know about Las Vegas. At least three hotels were hit, not just the Mandalay. This is all part of massive suppression. YouTube, Google, Facebook, Twitter, they're all involved in this on behalf of the government, which is, we're living in a surveillance society, but also total domination of the airwaves. This is really a totalitarian community we're in now, Dave, sad to say.
No question. Once again, give out your contact information so people can follow you.
Well, go to moonrockbooks.com. Some of my books are also still on Google, though they banned my second book, both the Sandy Hook book and I suppose We Didn't Go to the Moon Either have been banned by Google. In the second case, it's because there are essays there about the end of World War II that the official narrative we've been given is not right. The way things actually played out. And they did a massive sweep and took out hundreds and hundreds of books that discussed the Holocaust at the advice or urging of the Anti-Defamation League. And I've heard...
Jim, we got to hold it. I apologize, but we got to hold it right there. We are out of time, my friend. We're up against it. Thanks so much for joining us, Jim Fetzer. Again, Jim, good work. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Dave.
We'll be back in hour number two with Robert David Steele.